All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton coming at you here on what is a Friday morning. I'm recording this on January 24th. Bucks, of course, not much going on there. We've got the rumors flying about Jameis Winston, about Phillip Rivers, about what one side's going to do, about what the other side's going to do, about what other people who are now analysts would do if they were in their old jobs, all those things. So we'll talk about that today. We've got the bye week between the Super Bowl and the championships, the conference championships. So we'll talk a little bit about how to approach watching the Pro Bowl, because like it or not, we only have two football games left in our football season, and one of them's this weekend. And then, of course, a few anniversaries took place. Of course, they always do this time of year because it's the playoff time. So we'll look back a little bit at the Bert Emanuel catch. We'll look back a little bit at the Rondy interception return of the Bucks in the NFC Championship in Philly, because that's never, never, never too far away to look back on. It's always something I enjoy. And, of course, the Super Bowl itself, that anniversary is coming up this weekend. Remember, there was no bye week back when the Bucks beat the Raiders that year. They had the game in Philly, turned right around, went to San Diego the next day, and played it the next Sunday. So we'll talk about all those things today. And I want to thank you for joining us. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where right now and always you can get the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty. When you buy a vehicle at Bill Curry Ford, you don't just get the vehicle. You get the opportunity, if something goes wrong with it, even down the road, not in that first 6 months or a year, it could be 5 years from now, as long as you're still the original owner of the vehicle since you bought it at Bill Curry Ford, bring it back in there. They will take care of it. You are covered under the warranty, which is a really nice thing to not have hanging over your head. You know, a friend of mine just had a $1,400 car repair the other day, and it was a big hit for her. I felt bad, and that's the type of thing that could happen to anybody, but when you're at Bill Curry Ford, you've got in the back of your mind knowledge that, hey, that's not going to happen to me because I'm covered. So it's something to keep in mind in addition to the already transparent online pricing you'll see when you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. They're a mile north, about a mile and a half north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, just north of Hillsboro. So thanks to them. And as we get ready for this weekend, of course, it's Gasparilla weekend for those of you that are in the Tampa Bay area, and more specifically, like near South Tampa. And I know people come from all over, and that's fun. Gasparilla is always that weekend between, again, the conference championships and the Super Bowl. Although I remember when they did it, the year we had the Super Bowl where it was Giants-Ravens, which was the 2000 season, so I guess it was like January 2001. That was one of the final seasons, and then the Bucks one was the a couple years later. That was the final few years where they didn't have a bye week. So I remember that year Gasparilla was actually the day before the Super Bowl happened in Tampa. And I remember that year just absolutely crazy on Bayshore. And obviously, you know, Gasparilla always is like that. But that year when we had the Super Bowl the next day and all these people from out of town were like, hey, I'm going to try this Gasparilla thing out, in addition to all the people that normally go, and you could barely move on Bayshore. It was actually too much. But I remember that. Next year, it should be, unless they go out of their way to make it happen again and they push Gasparilla back a week, next year it should be on the weekend in between when we host the Super Bowl. But the Super Bowl's in South Florida this year, and of course the teams will be arriving there in the next few days. The Pro Bowl in Orlando, you've got some action there. We've been seeing Shaq Barrett having a lot of fun over there, and he's the one who's actually going to play in the game for the Buccaneers. And we'll talk about on the show today his status. And, you know, Jameis Winston gets all the attention right now with what is going to happen with him. But Shaq Barrett, who I respect the hell out of, by the way, because, you know, he's out there. He's got a chance to go test the market. He's got a chance for all these things to come his way. And yet, he's not playing a game of chicken. He's not trying to keep it close to the vest. Sure, he wants to make a lot of money. And sure, he wants to maximize his opportunity to do that, but he's not afraid to come right out and say it. He said at the Pro Bowl this week, quote, I don't know where it's going to end up at, but I'm confident that I'm going to be where I should be, which I think is in Tampa. And you know what? Again, he didn't have to say that, but he's been very, very clear this whole time about how much he likes it here, about how he wants to be here. He said, to me, it's Tampa, and that's just the way it is. I mean, it's not that he wouldn't go somewhere else, and it's not that the Bucs can now just screw him over and get him on some low-ball deal. But I like when a guy isn't afraid to say, no, this is what I wish to happen. I hope we can work it out, instead of trying to play games and, you know, sense smoke signals or all that stuff and misdirection, just say, no, I want to be with the Bucks. My agent's going to work it out. Hopefully we can make it happen. And that's not weakness. That's strength. That's saying, hey, I know what I want. I also know what I should be getting. I think both sides can get it done. I think they will. And he's one, you know, I was on J.P. Peterson's show the other day doing an interview with him, and he asked me, and he's been talking about all this too, but he asked me about, you know, looking at the Bucks free agents and especially the big four. We've got Jameis, where you've got, Philip Rivers, we'll get to in a minute, but you got Jameis, you got Shaq Barrett, you've got JPP, and you've got, of course, Sue, and how to prioritize those guys. And Sue's the one, I think, that was a one-and-done type thing. Not that he was terrible or anything like that, but I just don't think that's the priority right now. I think Shaq Barrett is the priority outside of the quarterback. I think JPP can be, I think without, if you keep JPP, Shaq, and you can still sign Jameis Winston, I think you can do all those things, minus Sue. I think that's possible if they want to do it. And there was something on Twitter the other day, I think Jason Pierre-Paul was like, there was some video of him like clearing his condo out or his apartment or his house. I didn't see it, but I heard about it. And there was a big to-do, like, oh my God, he's clearing out his stuff. And Greg Allman said that was normal, like off-season moving, and it was not anything to be alarmed about. It doesn't mean he's going anywhere. I mean, not saying he's staying either, it just doesn't mean anything. Like, don't read into that too much. So for those of you that saw that, maybe we're thinking, oh my God, that's some sort of a sign. It does not appear to be. And speaking of Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, if you want to, BobbyGameDay. The email address is BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. So let's talk about the Jameis thing just for a second, because, you know, we're not going to beat this into the ground every single show between now and whenever it is we find out what the Bucks are doing, but there's things coming out. There's going to be every week quotes, this or that. This week it was Mark Domenech saying, I think the Bucks want to move on. I think they'd be crazy. He's like, I don't see them franchising him, and they shouldn't sign him to a long term. So he doesn't think. But then Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio was saying, and when he wrote the article about Philip Rivers and the rumors, saying it doesn't make sense, this whole Rivers thing. I think it's more just rumors than anything. The Bucks probably should want Jameis Winston back as opposed to him. So you're going to hear all these opposing sides about what the Bucks should or shouldn't do, including me. I mean, I'm just another one of the voices out there talking, and including you too. And, you know, when you look at it, and Philip Rivers, you know, he lived in San Diego. Excuse me. And when the team moved from San Diego to LA, he actually stayed in San Diego. He loved San Diego, and I don't think he ever wanted that team to move, referring to the Chargers. And do you know what he did when the team moved to LA? And, you know, San Diego and LA are not that far apart, but they're like an hour and a half. And, of course, it depends on traffic, because there's a ton of traffic in Southern California, but it could be 2 hours, an hour and a half, somewhere in there. And so Philip Rivers decided to keep his house, but instead of just driving through all that traffic and just slogging it out behind the wheel, he decided to trick out like a giant van with like monitors and stuff where he could watch film. And he got someone to drive him to and from the LA Chargers practice facility every day. So he stayed on as the quarterback for LA even after the team moved from San Diego, but kept his whole house in San Diego. And imagine what a pain. I mean, anybody who's ever moved before knows what a pain in the ass moving is in general. I cannot imagine what moving is like when you have 9 kids. Like, that is a gigantic disruption to just everything you've already got going, everything you've already got set up. I remember when I was in college, for example, and you move all the time when you're in college or in your early 20s, and I'd have to clear out of my apartment, you know, at the end of the semester or whatever, because we're going home for the summer, or move back into a new apartment to start the fall semester, and this is in Gainesville. And literally, I would do absolutely nothing in preparation to move until like that. Like, let's say I was leaving on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. As of Friday night, my apartment would look exactly the same as it always did, like completely lived in, not a single thing unpacked, not a single box, just it would all just look like, hey, this is where I live. I'd wake up that morning, I'd throw my stuff together. Within maybe 2 hours, I'd have the car loaded up, and I wouldn't even need a van usually. I had to rent a van one time, I think. But I had like the car loaded up, everything, and that was it. And that was a pain in the ass, but even that was nothing compared to having, and then now I've got kids, And we have moved as a family one time. My wife and I have moved a couple of times, and that wasn't that big of a deal either because it was just us. But now with like two kids, and we did this once already, I'm not moving again for a long time. I mean, I don't care. You could like give me a winning Powerball ticket, and all of a sudden I'd be able to live anywhere I want, like some mansion on the waterfront with like a built-in slide that takes me from my house across the bay, whatever the hell it would be. I'd be like, yeah, you know, that sounds cool, but all this stuff, you know, I don't, I'm not moving. And that's what Philip Rivers did. He just stayed in San Diego and tricked out the van with like a 65-inch HD screen he could watch film on, make good use of the time it took every day because he's, you know, 3-4 hours round trip. And he would do that. So finally, now that he's pretty much run his course with the Chargers, he has uprooted and moved to, and everybody just said Florida when the reports came out, which tells you nothing. Just as a recommendation to people, don't ever refer to states as just the state when it's a big state with like multiple metropolitan areas. If you want to tell me someone moved to Vermont, fine, just say they moved to Vermont. If you want to say someone moved to Maine, or if you want to say someone moved to even Nebraska or something like that, fine. Don't say someone moved to California, because I don't know what that could be Southern California, Northern California, it could be on the coast, it could be inland. Don't tell me someone moved to Texas. Texas is huge. There's 4 major metropolitan areas there. Don't tell me someone moved to Florida. Did he move to Miami? Did he move to Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa? It's way too... I hate when people do that. And people do that a lot. Like, people really get obsessed with, like, just the state. Which, for some states, is fine. But anyway, after a little investigation, it turns out he's moved to the Panhandle area, like, near, like, Santa Rosa, I think. Like, the Pensacola area, whatever it is. Fine. So that's nowhere near Tampa. And the only thing those two places have in common is that they are both in the state of Florida. But of course, people connect the dots, and especially with Jameis Winston being up in the air right now about what's going to happen with him, people were like, oh man, this is a perfect fit for the Bucs. Philip Rivers, he's going to come in. And listen, I've said this already. Whatever you think of Jameis Winston is fine, but if you're moving on from Jameis Winston, moving on to use Philip Rivers to me doesn't make any sense. He's only a little less turnover prone than Jameis. He's 38 as opposed to 25. I mean, the whole point of this, if you don't think Jameis is the guy, is to do something that is, I would think, different. I mean, and listen, 20 interceptions or whatever Philip Rivers had is less than 30. There's no question about that. I'm not saying there's no difference at all. But at his age, I just think you're better off, especially knowing what we know about Bruce Arians' offense and the changes from year one to year two. And Carson Palmer even said it. He went on that radio interview a couple weeks ago and said, you know, Bruce Arians' offense is complicated and involved the downfield stuff. It's not crazy that interceptions went up for Jameis, although, again, 30 is a ton. But, you know, it was probably expected that they'd go up a little bit, as did the yards and TDs. That's the nature of Arians' offense. But that second year, you would expect improvement with more understanding where you'd be able to cut down on the interception part of it, at least somewhat. And we've talked about that on this show. We've talked about bulking and cutting, if you've heard past shows, all these other things. My point is, I think if your other option is Philip Rivers, you see this through at least for a season with Jameis. And, there could be other people or the draft. I'm really surprised at how many mock drafts, and you know if you've listened to this show going back over the years, and I'll do it again coming up in a few weeks, my annual rant about the whole draft culture and the way the draft is covered and people with their mock drafts, and it's just inanity. I think it's all just incredibly stupid. But I have seen a few, and I don't actually open any mock drafts, but just being on Twitter, a lot of the people I follow will say, hey, I have the Bucks for the Bucks mock draft. Here's what I have. So I'll just see it on Twitter. I would never click on one. I could care less about anybody's mock drafts. It's mental masturbation is what a mock draft is. Which, again, is fine for a lot of us. I mean, if that's what you're interested in, go for it. My point is, I've seen a lot of these mock drafts that have the Bucks taking a quarterback with the 14th pick. I mean, I can count 3 or 4. Greg Allman, who I like and trust, has the Bucks taking Justin Herbert in his draft. And there was a few other ones that had him taking various people. One was Jacob Eason. And, I mean, if you're moving on from Jameis and you're starting completely over, I could see that. Although I don't think that's a move that's going to help you in 2020. I could see that. But if you're keeping Jameis and you're still burning that precious first-round pick on another quarterback, whether you want to put pressure on him or whether you're just intending to go one more year and have somebody ready after that, whatever it is, I mean, we have needs, man. Immediate needs. And unless quarterback itself is the immediate need, and like, in other words, unless you are this guy's going to play for us in 2020, I don't think you should be reaching for a guy just so you say you got a quarterback and put pressure on Jamie. I mean, I think, again, with what we need at right tackle, with what we need up front on defense, you know, there are needs. I mean, the offensive line thing would really make a difference, I think. And the offensive line wasn't as bad as it got made out to be, including by me, for a lot of the season. But still, right tackle is a huge glaring need. And you can get a good one at 14, probably, or whatever else they might decide to do. So anyway, the point is, all these Rivers rumors, I think, are just something that people, again, it's almost the offseason. It is the offseason for 30 of the 32 teams. Hey, he moved to Florida. Okay, who's near there that needs a quarterback? And then you go from there. And certainly, it makes sense. If I was a media member, I'd probably write an article about it too. And as a podcast host, I'm talking about it. So again, it makes sense. But I don't ultimately think there's anything to do with that. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can reach me at BobbyGameDay. Wanted to talk a little bit about the anniversaries we had this past week. I like going down memory lane. If you know me, you know I try not to say it too much because it gets annoying how often I say it, but you know how deep this Buccaneer stuff runs with me. It goes back to before I was even born. It goes back to my pregnant mom with me in the womb going to the 79 NFC Championship game, going to the 3-0 game against Kansas City in the rain with Neil O'Donoghue kicking the game-winning field goal, the only points of the game to clinch the Bucs' first-ever playoff berth. This is real greaseball, old-country stuff for me, all right? Like, my cradle of civilization is that area around Himes and MLK and Tampa Bay Bowl. That's where I was born, at Women's Hospital right across the street. That's where I grew up. That's where I went to high school at Jesuit right across the street. That's where it all happened for me. The old sombrero, all that stuff. This is way back in the old times for me. So, you know, looking back at Bucs history is always fun for me. And there was a cool thing that Jenna Lane, who covers the Bucs for ESPN, posted on Twitter. And I never realized any of this, but it was the anniversary the other day. It was yesterday, I believe, on Thursday. I'm recording this on Friday. Of the Bert Emanuel catch. This is the 99 NFC Championship game, for those of you that remember, that have been Bucs fans for that long. And the Bucs that season had one of the best defenses anybody has ever seen. I mean, that Bucs defense was incredible. And it deserved better than what it got because all season long, they just destroyed people. Got off to a slow start, that team. The offense was awful. Like, it was Trent Dilfer for the first few games, and he got hurt in Seattle. And Sean King came in and kind of, I don't want to say righted the ship because the offense didn't really do a ton, but he led them on a winning streak, and they started getting going. They went from, like, 3-4 to like 2-3 or 3-4, something like that. Ended up being a 12-4 team by the end of the year. And they only lost, like, one game. It was that blowout against Oakland. That was the only game they lost, like, after late September or something like that, or October. So anyway, they get to the NFC Championship game against the Rams, and it was the greatest show on turf. It was that crazy offense. Kurt Warner, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Marshall Faulk. And the Bucs and Rams had some great battles against each other in those ensuing years from 1999 all the way through to past the Super Bowl season. But they got to the NFC Championship in St. Louis. That Bucs defense, it was on them, all right? We knew our offense couldn't score, couldn't do anything. And they actually held the Rams to 11 points. There was a safety in that game, and then there was a two-point conversion that didn't get made or something like that. So it was 11-6 late in the game. Bucs and Sean King come out, and like most games, their offense hadn't whizzed a drop the entire day. But they had a chance. If they scored a touchdown, they were going to the team's first ever Super Bowl. So I remember, I mean, at the time, this is before 2002, obviously. This is the Bucs had never even done anything except made the playoffs in 97 in my lifetime. And now 99, they're like one game from the Super Bowl. I was in college that year in Tallahassee, actually. I went to Florida State for 1 year before I transferred to Florida. I don't talk about it much because I'm a Gator through and through. But when I was a kid, I was an FSU fan. And FSU is actually where I went first. And I didn't like it, and I transferred to UF. But all my friends were at UF, all my friends from Tampa. and all my buddies from high school. So I actually drove from Tallahassee to Gainesville for the NFC Championship game because I couldn't bear to watch it alone in my apartment in Tallahassee. I was like, I need to be. And I actually tried to convince my buddies to go all the way to Tampa with me because there was a big party at my aunt's house, and I wanted to be near my family when we went to the Super Bowl. But they didn't want to do that, so we watched it at an apartment in Gainesville, Lexington Crossing. So we are down on our hand, literally on our hands and knees on the floor, watching this final drive. And all of a sudden, even though our offense did nothing, boom, 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 they start picking up chunks of yardage. They might do this. They were down at their own 20 or whatever it was. End up getting inside Rams territory. There's still plenty of time. And they actually drive it down. And they get to a third and, or a second and 23. They had a sack or a holding penalty or something. It's second and 23 at the St. Louis, like, 35-yard line. And then it happened. They hit Bert Emanuel on a crossing route over the middle. Emanuel has to kind of lunge at the ball and not, I wouldn't say dive for it, but lunge for it, makes the catch, rolls over onto his shoulder. Big gain, 12 yards. Did not mean the Bucs had the game or anything like that. It was still 3rd and 11 at this point at the St. Louis 23. Bucs call a timeout. So it's like, okay, you know, if that had not been a complete pass, 3rd and 23 at the 35 is not a, we're not in great shape. I feel like with two plays, we can pick up 11 yards now. So then there's a timeout, and the referee says to Tony Dungy, hey, we're going to review the play. And you got to look back and remember, if you were around for this, there was nothing about that catch that looked shaky. Sometimes you see, like, oh, the ball moved or whatever. They showed the replay, and I was totally relaxed, and I was like, okay, we're good. Like, this is, I guess they're just being safe, whatever. And so they review it, and we're just waiting there. And then they overturn the call, as everybody remembers now, because the rule back then was that if the ball made contact with the ground, even if you're holding it in your hand, like, now, if you hold something in your hand, see, I'm touching the microphone, see? But I'm holding my cell phone in my hand. I have total control of it. That's a catch. But back then, it wasn't. It literally couldn't touch the ground, even if you had it. So they overturned the catch, blah, blah, blah. And total depression set in because at that point, you know, the Bucs had never done anything like this before, and it felt like they never were going to go to the Super Bowl. In fact, I remember going to Longhorn Steakhouse on Archer Road in Gainesville alone because my buddies all just shut it down. One of my buddies locked himself in his room and just went in there and didn't come out. Another couple of them just went home. And I'm sitting there, and I needed something to make myself feel good. And I'm not a big emotional eater. I don't try to do that sort of thing very often. But in this case, I went to Longhorn Steakhouse. And I'm a college kid who barely had any money. But I ordered the biggest, however many ounces it was. I ordered a steak. I ordered a baked potato. I got all the sides. I think I got an ice cream sundae for dessert. And I sat there at 20 years old, alone, just me at a booth at Longhorn Steakhouse on Archer Road in Gainesville, and just had the saddest solo steak dinner anyone's ever had in their life. And just didn't have anyone to talk to, didn't have anyone I wanted to talk to, was trying to process what had just happened, because I, up until that point, I really thought, hey, we're going to the Super Bowl, like, this is happening. And then, of course, it didn't happen. The Rams played the Titans. A week later, it's the only Super Bowl to this day that I did not watch. I didn't watch any of it. I just didn't want to. And I would never, ever miss the Super Bowl. But I couldn't do it. I was just, it broke me. And you know how that age is? I mean, I was only 20. This stuff, it's a little too important to you. Like in that high school, early college years, I took it a little too seriously. Like if that happened now, I'd still be devastated. But, you know, you get a family, you get a job and stuff like that, and you have a little more perspective. But back then, I took it way too hard. So anyway, the Bucs did end up, obviously, as you know, going to the Super Bowl a couple years later after a couple first-round playoff losses in Philly, and we all know what happened. So the point I'm making is I actually would not change. If you told me I could go back in time and change anything about that, like, oh man, would you give him the catch? If he catches it, they probably win. They definitely beat the Titans in the Super Bowl. They might even have two Super Bowls because they still would have won in 2002. You know what? There's no way to know how things would have gone had that catch been ruled a catch. First of all, they still might have lost. It was only going to be 3rd and 11 from the 23 with 47 seconds left. That's hardly a win. But second of all, you know, if they do win, do they beat the Titans? I don't know. Whether they beat them or not, Tony Dungy doesn't get fired, you know, right? I mean, he would have been a Super Bowl coach at that point, so he wouldn't have gotten fired. Certainly not if they had won the Super Bowl, but even if they had just made the game and lost to the Titans, then we never have John Gruden come in. 2002 never goes the way. I have no idea how the entire axis of Buccaneers history is tilted by changing the outcome of that play, but I do know this, all right? I wouldn't change a thing. And the reason I say that is because in my mind's eye, and this is another anniversary we just had this past Sunday, the 2002 NFC Championship game played on January 19th, 2003 is the most perfect thing that's ever happened in my sports fan life, not my whole life, but my sports fan life. And I don't ever want to think about anything that could have made that different. It was too perfect. It's just the most perfect thing ever. So, yeah, did that hurt at the time with Bert Emanuel? It did. And could the Bucs have won the Super Bowl that year? Yeah, absolutely. They might have. I have no idea. But now, in retrospect, knowing how everything turned out, and even knowing that the Bucs haven't even won a playoff game since that Super Bowl, that was the most fun I've ever had in my life as a sports fan. That was probably the most fun I've ever had, period. And that one game, those 3 hours, if there is a heaven, I'm not real religious, but if there is a heaven and there's football on in heaven, it'll just be the Bucs playing the NFC Championship game against the Eagles on January 19th, 2003, over and over and over again. Because if I could put something in a bottle, those 20 seconds from when Rondy picked the ball off and returned, if I could put anything in a bottle that I could just tap on and use anytime I needed it, it'd be those 20 seconds. Because it does not get any better than that. I can almost, if I was an actor, you know how sometimes you see movies where actors like cry on command and it's like, man, how do they get themselves to actually cry? You know, they're just acting. They're not really sad. If I had to do that, I'd probably just think of Rondy running the ball back. Like, if I do that, I can maybe get myself there and cry a little bit. It's as close as I could come because it's the most perfect thing ever. So, you know, Bert Emanuel, and I had no idea Bert Emanuel, like, took it as hard as he did, but he really took it hard. And he apparently, like, couldn't even talk about it for a while. Jenna Lane, I was saying before, she wrote an article. If you go to her Twitter feed and check it out, it's on there. And he, like, wouldn't talk about it, didn't want to come back to Tampa, didn't even want to, like, have anything to do with anything that would remind him of that play. Felt like he let the team down. And of course he didn't. He made a hell of a catch. And he caught the ball. And only recently, like, his son has gotten a little older, and, like, Bert Emanuel has one solitary picture of that play, like, somewhere in his house, and his son saw it, was asking him about it, and he didn't want to talk about it, but his son kind of finally brought it out of him, and he's just now, like, getting comfortable with it. And it was a cool article. Like, I had no idea Bert Emanuel took it that hard. I remember what a big deal it was that we got Bert Emanuel in free agency. I was like, wow, like, the Bucs never do stuff like that, you know, back in the 90s. You know, we'd gotten Hardy Nickerson, we'd gotten Alvin Harper, and it turned into a total bust. But Bert Emanuel came in, contributed, and again, that was a catch. But it was a big deal in his life, apparently. A bigger deal than I realized. And I'm glad he's doing better with it now. But yeah, I mean, the Philly game, can we talk about that for a second? Since we're going to have a memory lane show here, let's talk about that for a second. I remember the morning, the Sunday morning of the NFC Championship game. I remember waking up. And it's the most excited I've ever been to get out of bed on a sporting event day. Like, I've played, I mean, not at a high level, but I've played football and baseball and stuff like that. Never, ever even approached levels of excitement for any of my own games as I did for this Bucs-Eagles NFC Championship. And I got out of bed that morning, and I remember opening up the newspaper on the front page. And I still want to get this somehow and frame it in my house. I wish I had kept it at the time. But if you weren't already jacked up for that game, if you wanted to turn the goosebump knob up to like 15 on a scale of 10, the front page, I can't remember if it was the Tampa Tribune or the St. Pete Times, because there was both back then, but it was a big giant, and not the sports page, this is the front page, big giant picture of the Bucs in practice at the vet. Like, they were on the field doing their walkthrough with the vet. I think it was on like the Saturday before. And they were right on top of the big Eagles logo at midfield. And they're all wearing sweatpants and their jerseys with no pads and just helmets. And it was just them, like, walking through like a running play. Like, Brad Johnson was, like, reaching the handoff to Mike Pittman. And it was just a picture of the whole team from way up high in the press box. Like, you could see the whole field. And giant, like, 3-inch letters. It just said, "Are you ready?" And, I mean, I could have run through a brick wall just opening the paper that morning. And then wait until 3 p.m. So then the game happens, and I don't know how well y'all remember it, but remember, like, the Eagles return the opening kickoff to, like, the Bucs 25-yard line, like, the first play. And then, like, two plays later, they hand the ball off, and they have, like, a 20-yard run. So, like, it's literally 20, 30, 40 seconds into the game. No one's even got the popcorn bag open yet. And it was already 7-0 Eagles. Everybody's going crazy at the vet. I remember being at my Uncle Mike's house, and my entire family was there on my dad's side. On my mom's side, they, you know, they were also... And I remember everybody going, well, same thing, different year. You know, third year in a row, we're going to lose to Philly. And I remember I had this calm about me for some reason. And I think it was because that Buck team was so much better than even the prior 2 years. And I just said, hey, you know, if something bad's going to happen, I'd rather it happen like 40 seconds in. Like, you don't want to be in a tight game like in the fourth quarter and something like this happens and it feels like, oh my God, they just broke it open. It's 7-0 right now. That's cool. I said the next points matter a lot. And the Bucs drove down Martin Gramatica. I'll never, of all the things Martin Gramatica did in his career, good and bad, the thing I'll remember the most is the Bucs, after they got down 7-0, taking the ball and driving down into Eagles territory, and the drive stalled, and we came out for a field goal attempt. And it didn't seem like a big deal at the time. It was 7-0, and it was a field goal attempt in the first quarter. And it was like, I don't even remember, 40 yards or something like that. And Martin Gramatica stuck it. And it was 7-3. And I said, see that, I said to my family, everybody was there, I said that, it could have been 10-0 or 14-0. Instead, it's 7-3. Those next points were big. You watch. This game's going to level out now. And I'm not exactly great at predicting things when it comes to sports, as my Bovada account can attest to. But that day, I just had this comment. I said, hey, you know, 7-3 now, it's cool. It's just a regular football game. Like, don't worry about that early stuff. And then, again, if you remember, Joe Jarvisius on that little slip right over the middle, taking it up the sideline, down to, like, the 4-yard line, and his baby boy was in the hospital. The Bucs scored again. Now it's 10-7. The opening touchdown by the Eagles seemed a million years ago. And the Bucs just kept, the defense just kept the pressure on. And then it was 20-10, and then Ronnie Barber did his thing. And in my mind's eye, he doesn't even get to the end zone. Like, I just remember him running and doing that thing where he pointed with his thumb to the back of his jersey. And he just keeps running and running. And he'll always, I'll be 90 years old and I'll be able to picture it. And he's just running. And I remember just jumping up and down. And did anybody listening out there go to the stadium that year after the game? Because I remember the game ended and it's just pandemonium at my uncle's house. I mean, we're all hugging, people are crying. Like, it was crazy. And I had my buddies, a couple of them had come over, and I had my family. And we're all like, what do we do? Like, we got to do something, you know? Like, it was something, we couldn't just stay there. We're like, hey, let's go down to the stadium. And we didn't even know. We just said, it just felt like the right thing to do. Let's go to the stadium. Let's just go over there and see if anything's going on. So we get in my friend Lynn's convertible, had a sunroof, and drive down there. And again, for those of you that remember this, you know, for those that weren't here, thousands of people. I mean, every single person around the area, it seemed like, had the same idea. And it was just pandemonium outside the stadium. And it was one of those things. I remember just standing, like, driving down Himes, and my uncle was driving the car. I don't know why he was driving. None of us were drunk, but he was the one driving. We had the sunroof open. I was sitting on the roof of the car, like, outside the sunroof, just leaning down with my hands out on both sides, just high-fiving people on Himes. Nobody got hit by the car, luckily, but I mean, there was no, it was martial law out there. Like, there was no rhyme or reason to anything. It was complete anarchy. And man, that's as happy gets as a sports fan. Then the Bucs team plane actually ended up getting back to Tampa and flying over the throng of people, and they actually dipped their wing. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. They dipped their wing, flew over, so like the players could see outside the plane all the people out there. It was awesome. And then, of course, a week later was the Super Bowl. And honestly, even though the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl, my most precious and vivid memories are the NFC Championship game and Rondy. So every year on January 19th, no matter what, I always remember. Sometimes I'll post it on Twitter, and you got to mark that occasion. And again, the anniversary of the Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, and we'll mark that one too. But that's the good stuff right there. That's what we're chasing. You know, when I sit here and do this show year after year and week after week, and the Bucs can't get this right, or they can't get that right, or they've got hideous uniforms, they're 4-12, they're 7-9, whatever they are, the playoff streak gets another year added onto it where they haven't even been to the playoffs period since 2007. The Super Bowl itself, again, is still the one that's the last time they won a game. All these things, that's the high we're chasing, you know? And I'll tell you what, it can't be the only reason because you'd never be happy. I mean, if the whole thing is about just winning the Super Bowl, and of course that's the ultimate goal, but if that's what defines this entire thing, what would be the point? It's got to be more than that. It's got to be about having fun with friends. It's got to be about having a place, having a diversion from real life. And not that I'm saying life is so horrible, but whether you have good times going on or tough times going on, I always say those 16 Sundays every year, those 3 hours 16 times a year, there's nothing like them. That's the, and when the Bucks are playing, the world stops, and they could be 2-8 going into the game. They could be 8-2. But we're going to, damn it, we're going to watch the Bucks. Like, that's what we do. And every year in the Super Bowl, same thing. Like, every year, this is almost a little mini tradition in and of itself. People ask me who I'm rooting for in the Super Bowl. And I do sometimes root for somebody or another. But I usually say, well, the Bucks aren't playing in it, so I don't care who wins. And that's really the truth. I mean, I might be rooting for one team or another, or especially if I have a bet on it or something. But I'm a Bucks fan. I always wear a Bucks shirt to every Super Bowl party I go to, even though they're not playing. Because there's one team, the Bucks, and then there's 31 other ones that to me are all the same. They're indistinguishable. I don't have like, oh, I kind of like these guys too. I think of everything through the frame of the Bucks and what is in the Bucks' best interests. And that's all I care about because I'm a Bucks fan. And that's the only thing that's been the same my whole life outside of my friends and family. And I like that too. So anyway, hopefully next year when these anniversaries come by again, the Bucks are actually also playing in football games at the same time. And maybe we can make some more memories that'll have anniversaries for those 10, 15, 20 years down the road. But as it is right now, we'll have to keep ourselves warm by the fire, which still has those logs in it. That Super Bowl log is still in there. That NFC Championship game log is still in there. They ain't burned themselves out yet. They ain't exactly blazing like they used to be. I would like to put some new logs on that fire, but it's still warm enough I can keep myself warm. And that's the difference, by the way, between winning a Super Bowl and not, because I see like what happened to the Falcons a couple years ago, losing 28-3, and that's devastating in any circumstance. But if that ever happened before the Bucks had ever won, like imagine having never won the Super Bowl, then leading it 28-3, then losing. Like I can't even imagine that. Or like the Titans came up short again. They've never won one. They've been to one, but they haven't won it. And they have had a couple other chances in the AFC Championship game. Or some of these teams that you see every year try and try and try. The Chiefs, for example, I mean, they have won, but it was so long ago that most people, I mean, anybody in their 30s or 40s wasn't around last time the Chiefs played in the Super Bowl. It's been 50 years. So for them, this is an even bigger deal than just making the Super Bowl. That's 49ers were in the Super Bowl a few years ago. And imagine if something awful happens to the Chiefs. Like, what if they blow a big lead? Or what if there's some controversial call that costs them a game? I mean, it rips your heart out even more. And I always think about those types of things when it comes to the Bucks. And as bad as it can get, and it's been bad for some years, it can never be as bad as before they won the Super Bowl because we know what that's like now. And there's something about knowing what it's like and having, and it might get to be 20, 30, 40 more years. I'm always going to remember, though. And hopefully it doesn't get to be that long. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com on Twitter. You can get me at BobbyGameDay. And that's just about it. Fun show this week. Didn't expect to go down memory lane for that long. But again, you get me talking about that stuff. And a lot of times it can be hard to stop. So we'll be back next week. This was our bye week. Oh, I forgot the Pro Bowl thing. Really, what I do is I bet like a $5 parlay on one team, and then either the over or the under pays like 15 bucks. It's enough to care, and it only costs 5 bucks if I lose. Other than that, yeah, it's not really real football, but it's the only football this weekend. And of course, the Senior Bowl, too, and we'll get all into the draft stuff after the Super Bowl. But next week will be our pre-Super Bowl show, so that'll be a lot of fun. Have fun at Gasparilla this weekend. Be safe if you're going out there. Maybe you'll see me. I'll be on a bike with kids and all kinds of stuff. And if not, I'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to Joe Bucks Fan for giving me this platform. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great, fun, safe weekend. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.